fast today.
Well, we clocked the T-Rex at 32 miles an hour.
T-Rex?
Mm-hmm.
You said you've got a T-Rex?
Uh-huh.
Say again.
We have a T-Rex.
Put your head between your knees.
Dr. Grant. My dear Dr. Thatcher. Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Hello and welcome to Skanon Podcast number 23. I'm the site managing editor, Skanon managing editor Niall Murphy. This is Philip Bagnell.
Hello.
I couldn't decide which way I wanted to go there. And Jason Doyle.
Hello.
Oh, sorry, what? That could be misconstrued.
You'll buy one of us dinner at the end of this podcast.
Yeah, I'll buy both of you dinner. You know,
yay!
I'm an equal opportunities offender.
What a trooper he is.
Indeed. It's about time you bought us dinner.
Oh, that's nasty.
We like you too, Niall.
So we'll start off, rather than we will keep the somber news
until late.
And we'll start off with what we were watching this week. So, Jason.
Oh, yes, I've been catching up, as regular listeners would have noticed. I've missed a few films. But yeah, this week I've a couple in the top 10, so we'll talk about them when we get to the top 10. And two and a half others.
Two and a half.
How to Train Your Dragon 2, which is great fun, and possibly the best animated film I've seen in the cinema in quite some time.
Like a movie.
No, I actually think, like, this is just beautiful.
It's a
stunning looking film. And I mean stunning to see the big screen. It's amazing. Some of the scenes in it actually bring it up to the levels of the first film. Overall, it's not quite as good, but good lord, it's so much fun.
That scene when he comes up through the clouds,
yes.
The two dragons come up through the clouds, all you see is the rider come first.
Oh, it's amazing. And then the scene that's kind of in the kind of dark and inside the kind of rocks.
Yeah.
Just following that is beautiful and terrifying in its own way. Like,
when, right near the start, when Hiccup goes down from the where he was perched with his map and goes through to where the dragon captors are.
Stuff in it is just what he can do. It is astonishing. The film itself, I think, was a little less. There was a muddled kind of 20 minutes in the middle. I was kind of, come on, get to the rest of it, get it moving again. But aside from that, great fun. Really great fun.
It just kind of makes me sad that I haven't seen it yet, but it's always good
plenty of time.
I know. But it's always good to be reminded that we live in such a wonderful world that there is a dragon out there named Hiccup.
Yep.
Oh,
no, there isn't a dragon out there named Hiccup. The dragon's called Toothless. The character's called Hiccup.
Sorry, forgot. But Hiccup and Toothless.
They're a great part.
Sorry, I got mixed up. But yes, that is.
What else did I see? Just fresh off the presses of 2 days, one night.
Hurrah!
Philip has seen it yesterday.
I did.
This is great stuff.
Stunning
this
stuff from the Dardens.
Amara Cotillard doing her thing.
Of being
we take it
phenomenal.
For granted. She's
we
amazing.
Do.
She's
and
absolutely amazing.
One of her best performances yet.
Yeah. And it was an interesting film. Like, I was of the impression that it was a kind of, as I said to you, kind of a slightly Dardens high concept kind of thing of, you know, she must see these people at weekend, try to save her job. And that all happens, that's fine, but it's not really about that.
It's more about how it's a search for dignity.
And
especially in the face, in particular in the face of a potentially crippling mental illness.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And it's about that kind of finding something to cling on to, anything to cling on to.
Anything at all.
And there's some absolutely astonishing scenes of unexpected small moments that are extraordinary.
Small moments, but huge emotionality.
Yeah.
It's really something to behold. I mean, that's the Dardens for you, bringing out poetry in small scenes like that. Come out of nowhere.
Go see it. I want to see it in the top 10 somehow next week. People go see it.
Yeah.
Don't have me warn you again.
It'll certainly be in my personal top 10 at the end of the year. I can always guarantee that.
It should be in mine. It'll definitely be in my top 20. I don't think I like it quite as much as you. I don't think it's at the top level, but very, very good.
Mm. Knocked me for six. Phenomenal stuff.
And last but not least, I've watched in two segments so far, and I'm determined to finish it, Diana.
You poor sob. Why?
I stumbled onto a Netflix.
I wouldn't
buy it. I says, it couldn't be as bad as the reputation it has. It's as bad as the reputation it has, but boy, God, it's hilarious. I mean, some of the lines are, like, this could be played as an absolute comedy. This is insanity. Like, tell me, doctor, can a heartbeat actually broke? I am a surgeon. And then it stops. This is conversations that are written on the back of cereal boxes. It's insanity. But good lord, Naomi Watts looks embarrassed. Everybody looks embarrassed. It's all in this rosy glow that seems to not exist in any real world. It's insane. Oh. But I will finish it and report back next week.
Do. But already I can just say, Oliver Hirschbiegel,
what
happened?
What? How can you go from downfall to this? Well, it's literally downfall.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it hasn't even been quite a straight downfall. It started with downfall.
Oh, yeah, then it went.
Invasion.
Yeah.
Back up a bit with 5 minutes of Evan, and now down to that.
Diana is rubbish.
It is, but it's unbelievable. If you're half drunk, as I was watching it, and I was,
good
I was having a couple of gins, and I was giggling like a schoolchild. It's hysterical. But part of me thinks there's a tiny percentage of me thinks it might be brilliant and in a joking kind of way. But anyway, it's nonsense. It's absolutely
so. It's a film that you watch ironically.
Yeah, oh, it very much. On. I think it'd be a cult classic 10, 15 years down the line, honestly. You can see late night screens where people just burst out laughing all the way through.
I'm up for that.
Oh, yeah.
So when she learns to use a microwave?
Oh, that's hysterical. Absolutely hysterical. There's lots of that. Oh, my God. You actually have to pause at a couple of points and kind of go back to see, did they actually say what they said?
I've never seen it all. But I clearly have missed that bit where she learns to use a microwave.
Oh,
okay. Is that not... I mean, however you feel about the woman... But that's an insult to anybody. Jesus.
It's the royal family, isn't it? I mean,
it depends.
I'd like to believe it's true.
But on any of... If you imply that someone, especially someone like her, can not use a microwave, that's... Oh, my God.
But it's...
Reductivism doesn't begin.
The idea is I meant to show how cloistered she was and how, you know...
Removed
it's a
reality.
Bloody microwave.
Yeah,
I know. Listen, we've already given a fart in which airtime.
We have.
But it's fun. Bizarre.
Yeah.
And, Philip, what have you been watching, young sir?
The most thing I watched was 2 Days, One Night, which is, as we said, just stunning stuff. I didn't get a lot of time for much else, although I did watch Mephisto.
Oh, that's true. You
I did. I picked it up the other day. You saw that on Twitter. Which is Istvan Szabo's drama about a theatre actor who finds favour with Nazi officials in the 1930s. It's essentially a Faustian tale. So you can kind of guess where it's going to go, but it's such a powerful, emotional drama.
Okay.
Klaus Maria Brandauer as the actor is just a heck of a performance. Just that image of this bald man with the white paint. It's almost an image of death, which...
I'd heard the name of it, but I'd never seen it.
Yeah, it won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film back in '82. A bit worthy, but on the whole, well worth a watch. My other notable watch was Welcome to New York. Yes, this is Abel Ferrara's dramatization, only ever slightly fictionalized take of the Dominic Strauss-Kahn controversy. And I loved it. I went in expecting, thinking it might be, it's okay, Ferrara, I'll give it a go. And it blew me away. Depardieu is excellence. He just goes full asshole on the thing. He's horrible. And that's exactly what Ferrara wants to do. He has no compunction in saying, this guy is an ass. He's horrible, he's misogynistic, and he doesn't care. It's about the corrupting power of power.
Yeah.
And it's quite scary to watch. And as I say, Depardieu's on fine form. Jacqueline Bisset is in it as well, as his wife. She's very good. And you almost feel like holding your breath, holding your nose at some scenes, but go with us. And it's a fine portrayal of moral decay.
Ferrara is always worth a watch.
I mean, he's addressing his usual themes here about moral corruption and its ilk. But when he does it so well, no objections here.
Niall?
I went on a rewatch binge, mostly of one of Robin Williams. So I rewatched Dead Poets Society.
Marvellous.
And then I rewatched Hook and Mrs. Doubtfire.
Okay.
Of the three, I'd be most keen to discuss Hook.
And Good Morning Vietnam.
Love Good Morning Vietnam.
So that was most of it.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What was the one you've rewatched that you hadn't seen for quite some time, and what was your reaction to having watched it again?
Well, I hadn't seen Dead Poets Society or Hook in a long time.
Yeah. Hold up.
Childhood Niall loved Hook an awful lot more than adult Niall.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, God. That film has some issues.
Really does.
But Dead Poets Society, I think I appreciate it more now than I did when I was younger. And
it's so well put together.
It is.
I mean, that's the way it came across. It's just a perfect little story.
Peter Weir.
He's a fine filmmaker.
Yeah, the iconic scene, the turning point of the film, because I'm not going into spoilers on it, but
it's 20 odd years.
But still, when that happens,
yeah,
that hits harder now than it did.
Oh, really?
Years ago. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's just, and then the blame and the fallout, and you're just like, this is so irrational, just so completely pointless.
But blame like that always will be. That's the nature of these things.
I mean, he rewatches well, actually. It's been a long time since I've seen it.
I think it's because of the weight of what's happened here as well, with the fallout of the Catholic Church and all that sort of thing. There's a very religiousness to the structure of that boarding school, and then
it's all about control.
Yeah, exactly. And so in the wake of having seen films like The Magdalene Sisters and having seen Philomena last year and stuff, that you can relate it to it more
structurally
now.
They're
kind
of control and keep people in their place
or doubt as well. That was what I spent most of. And then last night I rewatched Jurassic Park because
that's our next news item.
We'll get to that.
Which segues into the death of the late great Richard Attenborough. Baron Richard Attenborough.
That makes sound like a villain, which he probably would have liked.
Baron Attenborough. I like it.
He was Baron Attenborough. Yeah.
I'm envious just of that man's talents, actor, director, and all around genuinely lovable guy.
And World War II vet.
And World War II vet.
He just makes me sick. I've done nothing with my life.
Here in the Lordship.
Yeah, he was involved in the RAF's film unit, and he sat in the bomber seat on missions flying over Europe, but as part of the film production of it, not as
somebody had to take the footage.
Yeah, exactly. He starred in a number of propaganda films for the RAF, so that were shown in Britain during the war. And then at the same time, he was acting, and he got his break from one of the directors who was involved in the RAF film unit. So it's
funny how things work out.
And then he went on to be in the stage production of Mousetrap, the original cast of the stage production of Mousetrap, which was, of course, the longest running stage show in the West End. It ran from 1952 until 2012.
Jesus.
And because he was part of the original crew, he invested in it, and he had 10% stake in
the takings on that. Bravo, sir!
Business kind of money.
Fantastic.
but he had to sell part of it when he wasn't doing as well, and then he sold most of it when he was trying to finance Gandhi.
Chances are that paid off, though.
Yeah, that might have worked.
Eight Oscars will help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's people's opinion of Gandhi, actually?
I'm not a huge fan.
It's a bit long.
Yeah. I like it. It is too long. It is very worthy. But still, some scenes great.
I'm a bigger fan of Attenborough the actor than Attenborough the director. I think his films are a little...
They're a bit... some of them are, some of them aren't.
Shadowlands.
Shadowlands is lovely.
I love Shadowlands.
I'd have to rewatch. I wasn't a fan when I was younger, but that made me when I was younger.
Give it another chance.
Yeah.
Chaplin as well.
Chaplin's a pretty rote biopic. Those things go, but it is quite.
But it does
well
have
done.
A star turn.
Yeah,
great.
Thank
God we got him back.
What was that dreadful film? Didn't he direct that film with Chris O'Donnell, the Ernest Hemingway one?
In Love and War.
Yeah,
that's bad.
That's a dreadful film. Chris O'Donnell as Ernest Hemingway. Like, I mean, that's the all-time miscast, isn't it? I mean,
but then really. Again,
Chris O'Donnell as an actor.
Chris O'Donnell. He also gave us great stuff, though, like Magic. Anthony Hopkins as a ventriloquist, haunted by his dummy.
I saw that when I was a kid, and it freaked the hell out of me. I may have to rewatch that.
Thank Richard Attenborough for that.
Yes, indeed. I actually forgot that he had to do with it. Like, it just...
On the whole, though, even though I do like his films, I would agree with you, he was a better actor. And that is nowhere more epitomised than when you think of Richard Attenborough, most people think of him as the cuddly, friendly face of Jurassic Park, American 34th Street.
And John Hammond.
Yeah, the original's better. But contrast that with performances in 10 Rillington Place. He's chilling.
I've never seen
absolutely
that.
Chilling. Well, you know, you look at so many movies about serial killers today, you'll see a lot of it in 10 Rillington Place.
I've read up a little bit about it today, actually, because a few people had mentioned it, including yourself.
Horrible,
sounds amazing.
It's a horrible case, true life story. And the film, considering, especially when it was made back in 71, it doesn't hold back.
Yeah.
It's really, really chilling stuff. And Attenborough is marvellous in it as the very softly spoken John Reginald Christie. Now then. Ooh. Mm-hmm. Well worth the watch.
I think I need to watch that.
Mm. And of course, as I say, we also have Jurassic Park.
Yeah. Aww. And we have A Flight of the Phoenix and The Great Escape.
And
Brighton Rock.
And Brighton Rock.
Fine form.
Well, he was in the stage play Brighton Rock before he did.
He knew Pinky well.
Yeah, exactly. So.
Yeah, that's it. Sadly.
On his directorial front, right, he had Oh What a Lovely War. So, musicals are tough, you know, and to start with directing.
So you learn a lot on that.
As a musical, that's.
He did a couple of them. He also did Chorus Line.
Chorus Line came after Gandhi. So, like, 3 years after Gandhi, he made Chorus Line. Then he made Cry Freedom.
Cry Freedom's not bad.
Okay, yeah.
But it's typical of these kind of things, more than a little preachy.
Yeah.
He only ever once acted in a film production of Shakespeare. And that was as the English ambassador in Hamlet. So basically all he does is runs in and says, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. Essentially.
That reminds me, I like his little turn in Elizabeth.
Yes.
But then again, anybody can...
William Cecil.
Even if he wasn't good in that, and he would still look good because he has to stand next to Eric Cantona.
That's a fair point.
But I was in Toronto in 2007 when his last directorial film, Closing the Ring, premiered.
I still say it's a very unfortunate title.
It was a film that was partially filmed in Belfast, and it's not a bad movie. It's very watchable, and it's just a bit old. It's a bit old fashioned. At least that's what I thought at the time when I watched it.
Interesting to see a rewatch for that kind of
because I was in Toronto and at that he was in the room afterwards, and I regret not going across the room now. But there was about 200-300 people in the way.
That would not have stopped you. I suspect
you can probably step over most of them.
Indeed.
but
tall jokes.
Can't you tell? happy news, please.
Happy news. Okay, so we're going to move on to news of Andrew Dominik.
This is okay. How about happy bizarro news?
Yeah, happy bizarro news. So we like Andrew Dominik.
We love Andrew Dominik.
Yes. Like writer director of Chopper, Killing Them Softly, and the wonderful, absolutely fabulous The Assassination of Justine.
Yeah,
by the coward Robert Ford. We give it the whole title.
It deserves it.
This is bizarre.
He's writing a new film, a remake of martial arts film Shaolin Temple, and Justin Lin is going to direct it.
This is the weirdest kind of writer director thing I've read in quite some time.
Yes, indeed. Justin Lin, Andrew Dominik. That's one very
odd Venn
diagram.
I like to think he exists in different spheres. Completely.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Justin Lin, who, of course, is most notable for directing 5 of the Fast and Furious franchise. Five of them, yeah.
Which one didn't he do?
The last one, Fast 6.
Pretty, because that was one of the more enjoyable ones.
And G.I. Joe 2.
What a resume.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing that I don't really care about this, it doesn't really make any difference to me. The only thing I'd worry is that this is slowing him down on his...
Blonde.
It's his adaptation of the Joseph R. Oates novel Blonde with young Jessica Chastain.
Yes, indeed.
Which, a.k.a. get directing, Andrew, stop fecking around with screenplays for other people, please.
Yes, indeed.
On a note on the whole Jessica Chastain thing, she was the original person cast for Diana.
Yes, indeed.
So,
what a What a lucky escape that woman had.
The woman has a knack for picking out scripts.
Yes,
she can see she can smell a bad one a mile off, so all power to her.
Poor Naomi. Anyway.
Poor Naomi.
I'm wrong. He didn't direct the first two Fast and the Furious.
Ah.
Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift, Fast and Furious, Fast 5 and Furious 6.
There's too many F words going on here, lads. Seriously. Yeah. I can think of a couple more when we're describing these.
Far, far better.
But no, I think Blonde's going to happen anyway.
Good.
Thank heavens.
I need to see
Dominic
that.
Chastain, count me there front row center.
Yep.
So, that's very bizarre. We're going to move on to other odd news. As Sony Pictures has tapped the great Shane Black to direct The Destroyer. So this is Shane Black, who gave us Kiss Kiss Bang Bang and wrote Lethal Weapon and
The Last Boy Scout.
The Last Boy Scout.
The Last Boy Scout is fantastic.
It is so much fun.
It is such great
cheesy, self-aware fun.
Some of the best
work
Bruce Willis has ever done is in that film.
Bruce Willis, the man who killed a guy with a headbutt.
The first person to ever sell a script for $1 million.
Good man, Shane Black.
Long Kiss Goodnight.
Yep.
Which I also enjoyed it.
It is enjoyable. Not great, but it
is
enjoyable.
No, it's not great, but it's. I like it.
Again, anyway, it doesn't matter. The man gets a free pass from me for Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
And he gives Iron Man 3, which is.
Look up stupid enjoyable. In the dictionary. You know what you'll find?
Definition for stupid.
Yes,
damn it, you ruined the gag. It's a great script and a great film. And what exactly is The Destroyer then?
The Destroyer is an adaptation of the book series by Warren Murphy. But the
no relation.
It's Fight Club's writer Jim Ooles who's doing the adaptation.
Yeah, I just wonder what happened to him. He done though. I haven't seen his name pop up anywhere.
No, he did a good job on Breaking Down Fight Club.
Very much so.
Yeah.
So it follows a Newark cop. So not New York.
Newark,
the neighboring borough, who is sentenced to death, then resurrected following a botched execution. He's given a second lease of life serving in the enforcement arm of the clandestine US government agency CURE.
This sounds dreadful, I'm going to be honest. I hope this is more fun than it sounds.
But then again, bear in mind, Black did give us Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
Which is one heck of a step up from Iron Man 2.
Yeah, but I'm not a fan of the Iron Man series. I think they're
vastly
overrated.
Me too. But I did like
the
number 3. I can't deny.
I thought it was okay.
It's kind of the Punisher type.
Shouldn't have mentioned that. God, the Punisher.
Well, I'll wait and see. Black's a fun.
Well, I mean, in the comic book terms, not in the film.
Okay.
We'll see.
I'm afraid we shall see.
Yes.
On news of a sadder note, we lost somebody else last
for the love of God.
Stop dying, people.
We lost director Brian G. Hutton, who is best known for giving us Where Eagles Dare and Kelly's Heroes, the World War II film.
Oh.
The Sunday afternoon hangover choices par excellence. if I can't see Escape to Victory, I go to Kelly's Heroes every time.
You know what? But all this thinking, Brian G. Hutton, Kelly's Heroes. Could somebody just please wrap Donald Sutherland in bubble wrap and make sure he doesn't go outside?
The one that was concerning me is Danny DeVito. Because if you look at Maya Wilson, she starred in a film with Robin Williams in Mrs. Doubtfire, and she starred in Miracle on 34th Street
with
Richard Attenborough.
Mara Wilson, stop killing people.
So
I'm actually rewatching The West Wing at the moment, and I said the other day that if somehow Martin Sheen dies, I'm out. I'm not even watching anything ever again.
I couldn't.
He will die, but I mean, in this year, it can't happen.
No.
It just can't happen. Sorry, that's it.
But then again, he's lucky he's not dead as it is.
Yeah.
Remember Apocalypse Now. So.
Do you remember the plan to get him to be on the ballot for the last presidential election in Ireland? How fantastic would that be?
I'd have
I'd have voted for him.
Yeah, but
it's Jeff Bartlett, for God's sake.
He went to the John Huston film.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Fantastic. What a man.
Indeed.
Sorry, I don't know where sidetracked there, but anyway, that's fun.
The only problem is we'd have probably found Charlie Sheen naked on the Garden of Ars and Uthron at some stage.
Would that not just have made it better?
No.
No, keep Charlie away.
So
Emilio's West. Welcome, though.
Yeah, always.
So we have some TV news. but mostly because they're film, they're TV adaptations of film. So we have Spielberg is going to adapt Minority Report, or Minority Report is going to be adapted for TV, and also Shutter Island is going to be adapted. Scorsese Shutter Island is going to be adapted for TV as well.
Okay, not happy here, because first of all, Minority Report, perfectly fine film. I love it.
I really like it.
Yeah,
and why they have to put it, is a prequel or something like that, or in any case, it doesn't matter. It shouldn't be going to television.
But having said that,
the
though,
film.
Fargo worked tremendously well.
That is true.
Like
yeah,
I thought it was a superb season of TV.
Well, yes, but that's only one kind of example of how that
true.
Works. So
I don't know.
I'm wary.
We are in the aforementioned golden age, Philip.
The second golden.
Yeah, well, yeah,
that's
the second golden age.
That's what Juliana Margulies certainly described as at her Emmy speech last night. The golden
age. She should
age.
Know. The Good Wife is a fair show.
By the way, am I the only one who thought that Bryan Cranston and Julia Louis-Dreyfus kiss was hot?
I didn't see it.
I was a bit busy watching Sarah Silverman.
I didn't see any of this, by
I'm
the way.
Sorry,
I,
Julia Louis-Dreyfus all the way.
She's getting better with age. She looks amazing.
Not that we're shallow or anything. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
I'm a big fan of Shutter Island. I know not everybody is.
I like it.
I think it's great. Scorsese throws everything at this.
The review on the site's mine, and it's very positive.
I must have it in readback actually. I'm a huge fan. I don't think it's the best. It's not top tier Scorsese.
No.
I'm not saying that.
The plot's shaky, but God, those visuals are stunning.
They are.
And DiCaprio.
He's fantastic.
He's marvelous.
He's absolutely fantastic in it.
Just the eventual scene where he comes to realise what's happened.
There's a lot of great
one
stuff
of his
in
best
there.
Scenes.
There's a lot
in
of Sam Fuller influenced kind of things. Scorsese's working through all his kind of
exactly.
Noir
you can see
stuff and his 50s stuff.
A lot of noir. You
yeah.
can spot some Hitchcock,
yeah.
even some Giallo. A lot of influence,
there,
which is why I love it.
It should be that's it should be savoured by film fans, I think, as opposed to be picked through for not this early.
The start of it. When they go across the island, the sound design, oh my god.
That soundtrack is something. I have the soundtrack.
It's a wonder. I think it's a wonderful film. But would I like to see this on TV? Sure, why not? It's in HBO. Scorsese's already done Boardwalk Empire with them.
Which
he's an Untitled Music show. Boardwalk Empire's fine.
I tried. I hate
it. It gets better. First season is not the best, but it gets better after that.
You're asking a lot for me to hang on in there, to be honest.
I'm not asking
do
you.
The thing,
do what you need.
Just do what you like. What you can do with Parks and Rec. Just skip the first season and move on.
Really?
Yeah, Parks and Rec, if you watch it from second season on, it's great.
I watched the first season. It's a little bit of a struggle, but it gets so much better.
Exactly. So that's the thing. You know, just skip the first season.
I don't know. Like I say, after last night, I've got to start. I got to start back into Breaking Bad, and I need to start Veep.
Good gosh, is he still on Breaking Bad?
About halfway through. I take it slowly.
Yes, you do.
Each episode has to be savoured.
Savour away, then.
The weekend before last, I actually finally finished watching House of Cards.
I gave up halfway through season one because I was bored.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, there's only so many spacey asides to the camera I could take. It got exhausting. Absolutely. And it's like, this is only six episodes in.
I keep meaning to watch it, but yours is the first dissenting review I've heard.
There's a few out there. I'm not the only one. Thankfully, I thought it was until I threw it on Twitter, and there's quite a few that were meh by it.
Doesn't matter. No. To me, it's all about Robin Wright.
What did you think?
I like it, but I rather The West Wing. Mm. So, yeah.
The West Wing is terrific.
The West Wing for me is the greatest TV show of all time. So.
Ooh!
Yeah.
I'm rewatching. It's great. I'm on the second season.
What would be your pick?
Deadwood.
Have we established that?
Oh, we might have. I might have mentioned it on occasion. Should watch Deadwood, everyone, if you haven't seen it. It's amazing.
I'll second that.
Anyway, we've really got to ramble on.
We're going to move into the top 10.
All that'll be cut, by the way.
You say that, but I'm very lazy.
I know. Yes.
So, the top 10. At 10, Doctor Who.
All together now.
No, I'm not doing that. I can't hit those notes.
Yeah, so Doctor Who,
that's impressive.
One day special screening of the first episode of the new season in cinemas last weekend.
Yeah, I mean, don't go see 2 days, one night, people. But put bloody Doctor Who, which is on TV, into the top 10.
Yeah.
Two days, one night's number 11. If that is...
One night's available on Volta.
Well, still though...
Right, you're speaking against this because
I'm not speaking.
No. You can, because I want to speak against it as well. I'm a huge Thick of It fan. Give me Peter Capaldi back, you Whovian bastards! I want more elegant swearing.
I get the whole once-off special episodes thing. It's fine. But yeah, I mean,
I get it. The fandom is huge. Fair enough. Although I've heard mixed reviews on that first episode of the new season.
I gave up Doctor Who quite a while ago. So.
It's the third time that it's been done with Doctor Who, and each time it gets bigger.
Mm.
So,
good for them, I suppose.
Good for Capaldi. I'm delighted for him.
Yeah, he's a fine actor.
But like, I still want him back.
Event TV in cinemas. You know, event TV in cinemas is kind of cool. You know, to see
I think that's fair. I think it's an interesting idea. And if it was something that was more interesting, I'd certainly critique. But I'm not a massive Doctor Who fan, so...
It's cool. If all your friends told you jumping off a bridge was cool, would you go do it? If all your friends told
you
dumping a bucket of ice water over... Oh, shit.
No,
I wouldn't. What the hell is that about?
Anyway, we're not getting into that, Philip.
No.
That's for after the podcast. It's a podcast extra. Me and Philip ranting about ice bucket challenges for 45 minutes.
Well, I dumped 2 buckets of ice over.
What? You... I wonder what all those ice bags are for.
Yeah. Anyway, back
moving
to
on.
10.
At 9, and we're not talking about Philip, it's the nut job.
Oh my god, you little...
Yeah. That the animation movies that refuse to die.
This is strange. It's made almost exactly the same amount as it did last week.
Yes.
It just won't go away. Animation is just...
Wow.
Never-ending money pits. It's extraordinary.
We're still agape at this.
Yeah.
Because it's not any good, which is... It's
but
as silly
that's,
as that.
That's what I'm saying. That's almost besides the
bad
point, isn't it?
Animation. It's... Oh.
Yeah.
It's cookie cutter. Let's churn this out and let's... There's no.
It's okay.
But yet it made money.
Yes.
Which is probably why the Congress got nowhere near the top 10.
Well, the Congress...
Well, the Congress has its own
issues,
I think.
True.
I don't know what
true
audience it is for that.
It doesn't know itself. No,
no it doesn't. That's a major problem.
No. But again, Robin Wright.
Yeah, she's great. Listen... No arguments here. She's fantastic.
It's so meta concerning Robin Wright.
It's so meta. Yeah. Oh god, I hate myself just for even having to contemplate that word. It's meta.
At 8, and a film that is making bucket loads of money
and deserves it too.
Oh yeah, lots of money. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, so, I almost went to see this yesterday.
There's a compliment.
But well, I've been catching up, so give me a break.
Okay.
Jeez. But the screening was 3D, so I skipped.
Oh,
you're right.
Yeah, it's really not.
I'm out in 3D, like I'm done. So I will get to see that by next week because I'm on a bit of a binge.
You should.
It'll be gone by the. That's what I'll still talk about.
I'm still seeing 42 screens at the moment.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
But current projections, it's going to get 2.5 million
easily.
At the end of it all.
Yeah, easily.
Good.
At 7, Planes 2, Fire and Rescue.
Mm.
Who cares?
Barely making more than the nut job. With an established sort of...
But the nut job's out the same at the time. It's made over 100,000 euros
more. Exactly, which is...
Extraordinary.
What's weird is, because Planes 2 comes from an established universe. It comes out...
A tired universe.
But it's a tired one.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, it... Fine,
fatigue has set in about the sounds of it. Like.
Franchise fatigue, exactly. Mm. You know...
It's a franchise. Did anybody really care about it? Like, I mean...
No, but my one-year-old grandson has a Planes thing that he goes around on. So, you know, like one of those toy cars, but it's a plane... But there's a button on it and it has a propeller.
Well, there's your problem. His ticket won't cost as much as yours.
Well, he won't go at all. He's one.
Also, if you pass on to your one-year-old godson for me, that he has terrible taste. Sorry.
He's one.
No excuse. You probably bought it for him, didn't
you?
You should
buy him Taxi Driver and DVD. Or get him early. That's what you...
Oh, get him a little replica of Travis Bickle's Taxi.
I can't believe they're not in Toys R Us.
If you are listening, I am not showing an 18-rated movie to a one-year-old.
All right, 15 then.
Get him, I don't know, let's...
We'll think of something.
We will.
We're on Twitter if anybody wants to send some sort of movie, only inappropriate movie-related memorabilia to us.
You know, for kids.
Like the cane from Citizen Kane.
Yeah, all of that stuff. Oh, good lord.
At 6... A movie I definitely wouldn't be showing my one-year-old godson. Deliver Us from Evil.
For many reasons.
Yeah.
Probably.
Mostly because it's shite.
All right. That's on the poster, lads. If you look out, you'll see that on the poster. It's shite. It's got on.
Well, it's probably better than some of the things.
I haven't seen it. I've been a Scott Erickson defender because I really like Sinister, but this sounds bad. But I'll give it a chance. Probably not in the cinema, but I will give it a chance.
Come back to me when you do.
So that's the second of the week's new entry. Third of the week's new entry is Into the Storm.
Last week was a problem with all these just going up against each other. They've
all underperformed.
With the exception of one, which
yeah,
we'll come back to.
One, but, yeah.
Into the Storm, well, no wonder the reviews have not been great. And as I said last week, the advertising has been around for so long, I got fatigued and I didn't even go see the
It's been around since Twister, really. In reality, like,
yeah, when I think back on it, you know, Twister's not very, not good,
but not horrendous.
It's surprisingly watchable. Yeah. If you know,
I caught about 20 minutes on TV a little while ago. It's okay.
Twister has a better cast.
Despite Helen Hunt.
I like
Helen Hunt is a multiple Oscar winner.
Like, yeah, and that just no.
Helen Hunt in The Sessions is fantastic.
She is, but
and
Helen
that's
Hunt
a fine
in
film.
Yeah, but Helen Hunt in Mad About You. In fact, anybody in Mad About You.
Yeah, but that's a different issue. That's a different world
TV.
Altogether. Yeah.
Yes, but in a way, we're all winners. Shut the hell up, Helen Hunt.
Yes,
right.
What's that upset?
Moving on to one of the better films in the list, and possibly the best film in the list.
Oh, I doubt that.
I doubt that too.
What If? It's a very enjoyable rom-com. I mean, it's rare to see a really good rom-com, and this is a really good rom-com, and I wish I did better.
Good for it. 100,000 so far in its first 5 days.
It's all right, is it? No.
It's decent.
What were they expecting? I mean,
Jesus, you're looking at the likes of that travesty, the other woman, and that made significantly more.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Sometimes we despair.
They need
Fickle
to be rewarded
public.
For making good rom-com.
Yeah.
Anyway, at 3, Guardians of the Galaxy. So Jason went to see this.
Yes, I did. I've caught up.
Now, okay.
Right.
Now, you know Niall's stance.
We all
know my stance.
Yes, we all, yeah.
Whose side are you on?
He's on your side.
I'm on Philip's side, right? But.
But.
Right,
there's
right.
a but?
There is a but, because, yeah. I mean, on reflection, think there, right? Guardian of the Galaxy, and this, the only point I didn't quite agree in your review was, even though you're quite correct in terms of you're saying the characters are the predictable characters that you get familiar in tropes terms, and I mean, the characters are unusual.
Yeah.
The cheeky one, the so on and so forth.
Right.
But they're still great characters within that. They're just serviced by the most woeful of screenplays. It's so rote, isn't it? It's like
exposition.
You've got the
exposition.
Rocket Raccoon, who should be hilarious and whatever, and isn't. You've got Chris Pratt, who has oodles of personality, coming across as dull. You've got Zoe Saldana, who
wasted.
Gets to stand around a bit.
Wasted.
Dave Bautista, actually pretty good.
Isn't he?
He invests character into it more so than any of the other backstories. It's the only one that actually resonates in any significant way.
And he's hilarious.
And he's funny, yeah.
He is.
The Groot thing, the Groot Rocket Raccoon, R2-D2, C-3PO bit.
Yeah, that's it.
It's fine. Like, we've all seen it. Since Aaron Hardy, the two people together.
Yeah, that's all it is.
It should have been so much better. They had them all there.
Yeah.
And they dropped the ball. I think they really dropped the ball. And which not say when it's and the sequel will come around, obviously, because it made a fortune, that they won't get it right for the sequel.
Because
I don't think
so
James Gunn is the director.
In the original one.
But I'll put you this way. I saw Serenity without even knowing Firefly existed, right? A long time ago. And I just saw it as a kind of... Just watch it.
Same.
Characters were there. Boom. Story was there. Screenplay was there, more importantly. Direction was there. It fizzed. And I've seen it compared to Serenity.
That's Joss Whedon.
But that's the point, though. This is James Gunn.
Just because...
James Gunn is not Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
No, but the point
is... That is the point,
no matter who is directing or writing, they have to aim higher than just this kind of bland exposition.
Seem. And there's ways to get next. Like, there's points in that film where you see something and you go, right, I get this. And then you'll say it. Like, this point, they're in the kind of terror in the prison and the press the buttons and then everybody floats up outside.
You disable the gravity.
We know, because people are floating up out there and there's nobody floating up in here. Like, dialogue is idiotic.
It really
bordering on embarrassing. And it maybe shouldn't matter in a lot of ways, but it jars you out of film. It's silly and pointless and it ruins the experience. It sucks the...
And the worst thing was, the film was going for a kind of silly, very self-aware kind of silly, but ultimately it has to conform
to the
Marvel
is the whole
things.
MacGuffin, Maltese Falcon thing. That's great. That's a great line, and I get that. And it was very smart of them to do that.
Yeah.
But that's about as smart as it got.
And it didn't have nearly enough of it.
Yeah. Fine.
Yeah.
But it never got that good again, and it needed many more of those moments.
No.
Indeed. And the bad guys were pointless. Glenn Close was wasted. Bar that one word, which was very well delivered and really surprising.
Was it great?
Yeah,
that was my favourite bit in the entire
wasted.
Thing.
And
yeah, they were wasted, and then all culminating in another big CG
Marvel over
overload.
The city thing. Let's float another
something
ship over the city.
From
but, yeah,
space.
It's like,
yeah, yeah.
I was by the end, I was tired. I was actually tired, and I get why people like it, but I don't see it. I just I get what they get from it, but I don't get that at all.
No.
I'm sorry, just didn't really work for me.
Yeah.
I was coming home.
That's a pity.
On Saturday evening. Sunday evening. I was coming home and I was coming up from Wexford and put on the Guardian soundtrack in the car. And instantly my wife turns around and goes, can we go see Guardians again? So, you know, it's. You have that.
How many times so far?
I didn't go to.
No,
but
just in general.
Yeah, so, well,
have you seen it?
Oh, she's only seen twice. I've seen three times, so.
You're perpetuating these cookie cutter movies, man.
Yeah, see, at least when if I ever go see movies multiple times, at least I make sure they're good. What's your record, actually, Jay?
I've seen Raging Bull 6 times in the cinema.
Nice.
2 re-releases. I've seen it 3 times each in the airplane.
Very good.
Yeah, it was a bruiser of a week. Twice. anytime I can get to it. But I think that might be a record. I think I've seen South Park the movie 4 times since it was released. Because it's amazing and the best music I've ever made.
I saw Dark Knight 7 times in 2 weeks.
I can never beat that. Like that man is staying perfect.
I saw Inception 6 times.
Good
I saw Inception 6 times as well. Yeah.
What is wrong with you people? It's a fine movie, I only joke. But 7 times, 6 times? Ugh.
I saw the reboot of Star Trek 11 times.
That I
11?
What?
11 times. Yeah.
You need a support group, man.
Niall is the comic book nerd of the group, people.
And I've watched it about 30 times.
11 times in the cinema.
I know.
Can't
that strange?
Record be beaten? Somebody tell me that. That's insanity.
Had a non-limited card. I was living in Holland on my own.
Oh, bless you.
Could you not do the decent thing and put on your computer and do things?
In Holland? You can step outside.
Look in the window.
Actually, anyway, sorry, there's a challenge to our listeners this week, and to let us know that you exist, because we are now a Blog Award nominated podcast, so we want to hear from you. Let us know what are your personal records for seeing a film multiple times on a cinema screen.
Right, if you can beat 11, that's amazing. We'll be very, I'm sure somebody will.
Tweet us at scon_com.
Yes. Anyway, let's back to the top 10.
Yeah, so at 2, Inbetweeners 2, down from last week's and the weeks before, number 1.
I haven't seen it, 1.7 million, good lord, it's making money.
It really is.
It's because it's
not bad.
I'm telling you, they're
exactly.
going to do another
enjoyable.
One. They'll do another one, I'm telling you.
Well, they should, because they make so much damn
yeah,
money.
That's what
yeah, but they
them.
Shouldn't, because it'll be a dip in quality.
But nobody cares.
That's not how films
no,
get
no, it's economics, man.
Jeez.
Really?
Jeez.
And on to Lucy.
Lucy!
Yes, we love Lucy. Well,
we do. Well,
more
I like Lucy.
I saw it yesterday. I think Lucy might be brilliant. And I know him, I can see the look on particularly Phil's face. And Niall is kind of slightly guff on a little bit. But
it's a comic book movie.
It is a comic book movie.
Yes.
But it's not a superhero movie.
It's actually a comic
yeah.
book movie. Yeah.
It is nonsense.
It's Gubbins.
But
like it's full. It's
you know my reaction to it was this. I had people telling me that I missed what was fun about Guardians of the Galaxy. May be.
You did.
But you know what? The fun that the people claimed I should have got from it, I got it from Lucy.
And then some. I got that times. I got an infinity.
Because the thing about Lucy is. It was nonsense, it was style over substance, and most importantly, it didn't care. It just went with
it. It gave you the basic, when you're 10, somebody tells you, you know, you use 2% of your brain, nonsense, that people thought.
And that is...
It gives you a little bit of shading from Morgan Freeman doing his Morgan Freeman thing. And then it says, listen, if you don't buy that, you're on your own. This is the rest of it. Enjoy. And
yeah.
It didn't waste any time doing that. More happens in the first 10 minutes of that movie than I've seen in whole movies this year.
It's true.
It's
extraordinary. Very efficient.
Like, and it never ends. And it has the decency the last 90 minutes to get the hell out of there.
Well, that's it. Because it's so tight, because it's so quick, you completely overlooked the fact that it is utter nonsense.
Oh, God, no, I didn't overlook it. That's the thing. I knew it was nonsense. But, boy, Lord, I can't remember the last time I've enjoyed nonsense so much. And I think I genuinely think the last act is extraordinary. I think the absolute sheer nerve. I mean, the first act that has the whole, when it shows the mouse and the trap and stuff. You know,
yeah, it's very
Besson. You're really on the nose here, like, and it's all
but
that.
But that's the thing. He doesn't care about on those. It's like, he's winking.
He takes that and then goes all Malick and Stanley Kubrick.
I know. At the point,
what the hell is he doing?
I mean, the fact that he has Scarlett Johansson, and then at various points in that last act, besides Tree of Life, aping scenes like 2001, but in one scene,
simultaneously, New York, nearly.
Yeah, but in one scene, he actually apes with Scarlett Johansson scenes from her under the skin. Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
And it's like the sheer audacity of it. Like, it's like this: somebody told him, "Listen, you're only going to get one more movie, Luke. This is it. You're out if this doesn't perform." He's like, "Listen, I'll try everything at this. Yeah. Absolutely everything I could think of." Like the last act, I actually thought was dazzling. It dazzled me.
Dazzling in its.
Listen,
it's
not stupid. No, it's not. But I'm not saying that. I'm not mistaking this for profound. Don't get me wrong. I'm not thinking that he's talking about the world. This isn't the star of fucking child. Like, you know, we're not saying that. Like, but he's reaching for something that those kind of movies, that kind of.
They never do.
They never do. And even if he fails, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's.
Because he tries.
It's extraordinary. I came out actually bamboozled by the film. I was like, good lord, Luke.
Me too.
I'm
me
sure
too.
A week from now I'll be like, oh, maybe I got a bit carried away there. Or I'll rewatch it and be like, oh, good lord, it's terrible.
But,
if it's not in my top 10, or certainly.
Really?
If it's my top 20 this year, it could be in my top 10. I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
It won't be anywhere near mine, but. I mean,
I don't think I'll be in a solitary view that I've that way.
No, I mean, I've seen people who love it as much as you do, and I can get why. Because, like you say, it's a kind of movie that is reaching for something and that these kind of films never really reach for. I agree with you, I don't think I've been just pinned to the back of my seat by an action movie in a number of years. Probably since The Raid.
And how bloody good is Scarlett Johansson, by the way?
Marvelous.
What a year she has had. Like, she's extraordinary in this.
Between that, her Under the Skin, and all the other successes she's had recently.
Captain America, even that. Fucking up the
just
second awful
she's
movie.
A screen goddess.
She's extraordinary. And I'm...
A star.
Yeah, I was kind of like, wow, go Luc Besson. And I was going in with... I wasn't having low expectations. I'd read reviews that say it was pretty decent. So I was having decent enough expectations. But I'm not a huge Besson fan. He's as terrible as he is good sometimes. And he hasn't been good in a long time.
Mm.
Like, properly good. So I wasn't expecting really much. And this film was like made for me, if we're going to go there. It's not really, but by God, it didn't work.
It worked to an extent for me.
I'll tell you something.
It's
a lesson that a lot of filmmakers could learn these days. Stop making 2-3 hour movies when they don't need to be. 90 minutes, get in, get out. Some films needed it.
Yeah, it's true.
Edit.
The editor is your friend. Remember that.
I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
On to the review section.
Woo!
So we open with the film that opens on Wednesday. That's tomorrow, it's time recording. And that's Let's Be Cops.
Let's not.
Yeah, all I'll say about this is I've seen this trailer twice now in the last couple of days. And if, as they say in comedies, a lot of the best jokes in the trailer, it's in serious trouble because...
Nothing.
Stony silence in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
Both times it looks dreadful. Absolutely dreadful.
I'm wondering how this is done in the States. Because it's been out there a little while now. I don't think it's done great.
It hasn't done...
But considering that this is about two guys who, after dressing up as cops for Halloween, decide to exploit those roles... And try and get all the freebies they can whilst pretending to be cops. In the wake of the scandal in Ferguson.
Yeah, this isn't.
Ouch!
Yeah.
This is not good. How could anybody want to watch this?
Well,
besides the fact that it's not bloody funny.
Yeah. I don't know about it not being funny.
Well, I'd say it's a fair bet.
I'd lay some serious
money. I've seen it and like it.
Bradshaw didn't give it a good review.
No, it was John Patterson.
Yeah. I tell you, I'd be amazed. I probably won't see it because it really looks terrible. But
The aggregate sites like Rotten Tomatoes and Metacritic,
20%
there you go,
6.8 on IMDb.
Yeah. Oh well, like I say, somebody has to like these things.
Anyway, moving on. Film opening on Friday. All of the rest of these are opening on Friday. So it's new horror, As Above, So Below.
I kept mistaking this for that film that Bruce Broughton got disallowed an Oscar nomination for, Alone Yet Not Alone. So, yeah, good choice of title there. But anyway, as above, so below.
Yeah.
Catacombs of Paris.
Yeah, it's set in the Catacombs of Paris, and there's something down there.
But is it found footage?
Not that I know of.
It looks like it.
Oh, it is. It is.
Ah, there you
go. Now that I look it up, it says, yes, and it's found footage horror film and by the director of Quarantine.
I'm sorry, but has anybody learned the lesson that we don't like these anymore?
Did we ever?
No. Well, not since Paranormal Activity 1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's been a while since... I don't know, not since Blair Witch, really.
Blair Witch was 15 years ago now.
Yeah, it was... And that was a fine film.
Mm.
But it has to have more than the conceit, or else what's the point?
It hasn't got.
Well, I like the conceit of this besides the found footage, you know, something in the catacombs of Paris. I mean, you could do something with that.
I like the poster.
The poster's quite creepy, isn't it?
I like it as well, yeah.
The inverted.
Very evocative. I don't know, it reminds me a lot of the marketing for 28 Weeks Later and 28 Days Later.
Mm.
But
it's the colour, I think, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And just a landmark.
Yeah.
A landmark and something bad happening around it. Give me more of that. But
yeah, I still say Cloverfield if you're going to go that way.
Well,
I agree. That teaser was terrific.
That was that's how you market a film.
That was very, very good.
But I don't know how I feel about this. Have any of us seen it? I don't think so. Views have not been great. It's
6.4 on IMDb.
That looks pretty bog standard. Fair enough.
Anyway, so if you like horror, go see it. Otherwise, I wouldn't bother. And on to something closer to home, The Grand Seduction, which is Brendan Gleeson and so, yay, like Brendan Gleeson, then Taylor Kitsch.
I've seen this.
Yeah, so.
This looks very twee.
Twee,
he says.
Twee, he does. It's bleeding twee from every orifice. It is tweely bad. It's
Niall, please.
No. It's funnier than the film. It's about as sickly sweet as trying to intravenously inject nougat. I just can't bear this. It's actually plot. Okay, the plot is a remote community on an island. I think it's actually set off the coast of Canada.
Yeah, it's in Nova Scotia.
It's a remake of a French Canadian film.
A Canadian Irish co-production.
This is, yes, indeed. Kind of the nominal leader of this group is Brendan Gleeson, and they are. It's very remote. It's got very little employment, and a factory is proposing to set up near there. But this little village, I believe, called Ticklehead, they have to try and make sure they have everything in place, and that includes having a resident doctor. So, hence, The Grand Seduction is about seducing this young doctor, played by Taylor Kitsch, that wonderful charisma vacuum that he is.
That's unfair.
That is. If you've watched Friday Night Lights,
yeah, he's excellent.
He's actually
and
really
if you've watched John Carter, you'll back me up.
John Carter he's not the problem with John Carter.
He's one of them. I don't get him. I don't. But in any case, I don't have it. There's nothing in here to disprove my theory. And it's basically getting him there, and it's so forced. I mean, the guy, apparently, despite the fact that he's from Canada, he's a big cricket fan. So suddenly Ticklehead is a cricket team.
That's kind of bit.
Yeah. And
Doc Hollywood, basically.
Pretty much. But
exactly. That's what it sounds like.
It's yeah. Like, but it's just
without Michael J. Fox.
Without Michael J. Fox, exactly. Gleeson does his best. I mean, he's Brendan Gleeson. He's,
Gleeson.
I always just want to hug Brendan Gleeson. Except in the general, admittedly, but, you know.
That's fair.
Yeah. But I just feel like you've got some good, talented people involved, like Gleeson, Kitsch, Gordon Pinsent crops up in this for some reason. And directed by Don McKellar. Fine director that he is, but there's nothing here for any of them to work with, really.
That's pretty.
Twee all the way, and twee all the way home. Forget it.
There you go.
Right, on to another release coming out this Friday. Chloe Grace Moretz stars in If I Stay.
Not If I Go.
Young adult. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another young adult adaptation.
I don't care.
Also, Chloe Grace Moretz, is she not just getting particularly grating now? She's been in a lot of things lately that have just not held up. Kick-Ass 2, the remake of Carrie.
Yeah.
It's been a while since she's had something good. dare I say, let me in.
Yeah, it's yeah, let me in. Yeah, well, it's Kick-Ass, the first one.
I don't dig it. Anyway, if I stay.
Yeah, no, I can't afford. Not a back to Philip again for $1 million arm.
Hooray. Mm. Although, you saw this as well.
I didn't, no. I was,
oh, did you not?
Yeah, no.
Oh, well, we were talking about Twee earlier, and, well, this is coming to us courtesy of Disney, so there's got to be a little bit of it in there, except it's not a little bit, it's a lot. This is the true story of J.B. Bernstein, the sports agent, who in an act of desperation, apparently, sought to make baseball stars out of two young Indian cricket players. And culture clash of horror.
Oh, God, it sounds horrible.
Yeah, it's just...
it's so tight.
You know, it's... He goes to presumably try and rescue two young Indian urchins from the slums, and yet, of course, when he gets there, it all looks quite idyllic, and everybody is welcoming, and, of course, he's struggling, despite the fact that he has a huge house, and he sleeps with supermodels, and Lake Bell is living in his backyard, and why can't I have Lake Bell living in my backyard? I'm sorry, I'm off the point here.
You could have a lake or a bell in your backyard.
You just can't have both, though.
Shoot. In any case, it is Twee, and the only thing that saves it is its charming leading man, John Hamm, Don Draper himself, and Lake Bell, as potential romantic interest who isn't a model because, you know, quirky, she's a doctor, and that's her thing. And seriously, go see her film In a World instead. Yeah, there's...
Or just watch Mad Men.
Or just watch Mad Men.
It's a Tom McCarthy script.
That's so disappointing. The man who gave us Station Agent and Win-Win. It's
yeah,
a real...
Surprising.
It's a shockingly safe film.
Yeah.
And besides McCarthy, there's a lot of talent wasted there. Craig Gillespie, director of Lars and the Real Girl. Bill Paxton is not given a lot to do as the potential trainer. And Alan Arkin, he can be a fine actor, but... Cripes, he can be really lazy. He can just lean on his old man shtick, and he does it here. It's blech, just meh.
No, we are not a fan, but it sounds good.
No.
It's a shame. No. Onto the film that promises to be much better, Night Moves.
Oh, yes, indeed it is.
So we're staying with Philip, and we will continue.
I've actually seen some things this week. It's remarkable.
I've seen some things this week. This is extraordinary.
Yeah, what's happened to us?
Seen four of the films that are out this week.
Good man.
Shock, horror. Somebody employ me. I could do this for money.
He'd do anything for money. Sorry, no, yeah. It feels more about it.
Okay, he has to buy me dinner first, then you.
Oh, okay.
Back to Night Moves. This is a change in pace from director Kelly Reichardt, who previously gave us the likes of Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Cutoff. And from you go from such relatively austere dramas to this is her in thriller mode. So, and it is remarkable.
Stretching herself in that sense.
Yes, but and doing it very, very well. It's a story of three environmental activists played by Jesse Eisenberg, Dakota Fanning and Peter Sarsgaard. And
they've got a fine cast there.
Yeah, I'm a huge Sarsgaard fan.
Sarsgaard is a fantastic actor. Fanning is getting past all those kind of cutesy roles she played as a kid. Good for her, I say. And Eisenberg, I would have been one of those people once upon a time who thought Eisenberg was just all kind of tics and
mannerisms.
Yeah. This is a performance to prove you're wrong.
Social Network would be the performance to prove you're wrong, I'd say. But yeah, it's good to see that
this
it's cementing it.
He absolutely cements it here. And their plan is to blow up a dam. So it's a very clear three-act structure. Plan to blow up the dam, try and put the plan into action, three, deal with the consequences.
Oh, okay.
But how exactly is it going to unfold?
Yeah.
Are they going to blow it up? What exactly is going to happen? Are pressures of all kinds going to get to them? Well, that's what you got to go and see. But trust me, it is well worth the trip. It's tense as heck at best, and fine cast, and I love it.
Excellent. Sounds good. I'm in.
You should be.
I am.
I'm glad to have you here.
Excellent.
Good.
And sticking with you for the last 12
Oh, blank.
Obvious Child.
Obviously.
Yes.
Right, this is an interesting one. A film about abortion that isn't a social issue drama.
Ah, okay. So this has got the Christian Right in America worked up.
Probably.
Ionian Institute is getting ready over here.
It's just a very simple tale about having to deal with the practicalities of it. So this is a potential star-making turn for comedian Jenny Slate. She plays, hardly a stretch, a stand-up comedian, but after she's trying to... She's one of our generation, essentially. She's trying to make her way of doing something that she loves. She can't be quite sure how it's going. And then what happens? She gets involved in one night stand with a guy, and soon after realizes she's pregnant and takes probably one of the most solid decisions she's ever taken in her life. She decides to have an abortion. And from that premise comes a film that is just... The fact that it deals with this on a practical level, no judgment, no hysteria.
Yeah.
It just gets on with it and gets to the point. And it acknowledges that this, of course, is not an easy thing for anybody to do. It deals with emotional
ramifications. Which in real life is never really actually acknowledged.
This is true. This is true. It's not black and white.
No.
And for that, on its own, it needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah.
Now, that said, I have problems with the film. It's a debut director, Julien Robespierre, and it shows there's nothing particularly remarkable about the making of the film, but the way it treats the material is quite mature, quite restrained, quite admirable. And, as I say, Jenny Slate, star-making turn, it's... Beautifully foul-mouthed at times. I'd say if you're up for something a bit different on material that you think you've heard about 100,000 times before, give it a go.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Just as I say, you do something different, it's going to be worth a watch.
Cool.
Good grief. I've been through a lot this week.
Yeah.
Well done, Phil.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're very proud.
Aw, bless.
It's great to see that you're getting out and away from the house.
I am just the
butt. We worry about you, Phil.
I'm the butt of the jokes this week, for God's sake.
Actually, why not?
It'll be my turn next week.
Yeah, back to normal then?
Yeah, absolutely. The way it should be.
So we're moving on to the special section.
For special people.
Yes, for special
like
people.
Like us.
So this weekend.
Speak for yourself.
So it's all film festivals. So the Feminist Film Festival is on this weekend, a new theatre in Essex Street in Temple Bar. So it's taking place over the 2 days, over Saturday and Sunday. And so there's a host of all feminist films that are being shown there. So it's all proceeds of it are going to SASAN, who are a non-profit organisation run for and by the victims of sex trafficking in Nepal. So...
Were they called? What's on the menu as far as the program goes?
Yeah, so we have there's one that you said you wanted to go see. But
I had a look at the lineup before, and some very good films. You got Sally Potter's Orlando, Fish Tank, Andrea Arnold's film. Two great films indeed. My personal recommendation would be Jean Dielman, 23 Quai du Commerce, 1080 Brussels. it's one of the classic, I suppose, feminist films. I can imagine that director Chantal Ackerman would probably want to issue tags like that for the sake of broader appeal, but it's great. It's absolutely fantastic. Great performance by Delphine Seyrig in the lead role. And one's actually not really readily available here. I think it's on Criterion, but you'd have to look for it otherwise. I'd say, give it a go. The festival is on this weekend, August 30th and 31st.
Yeah, so they're also showing Bananas on the Breadboard, which is a 54-minute long film that's opening it. And then Persepolis, which is just an amazing-looking film, amazing story, adaptation of graphic novel set in Iran. It's a tough watch, but it's worth watching. And then... So as Orlando, and then as Phil said, Jean Dielman, and then Fish Tank, and then the Irish premiere of Elaine Stritch, Shoot Me.
Ah, poor Elaine Stritch, we miss her.
Yeah, so it's now there's a double screening of two shorts, two Vivian Dick shorts, and the director is going to be there as well. The Irreducible Difference of the Other, and She Had Her Gun Already. So This is a solid.
Is that the sequel to Annie?
this is a solid festival with a good lineup and for a great cause. So it's worth checking out. But
that's not the only one.
That's not the only one. The following weekend, so this September 5th and 7th, to 7th, Sky Road Film Festival is taking place in Connemara in Clifton.
Wow.
Yeah, so this one's going to show a couple of Irish films. Sodium Party is going to be there, and A Nightingale Falling, which is actually really, really good. I'm quoted on the poster.
So did you say it's really, really good, or did you say something different?
Really good.
Ooh, it's so good.
Sorry. I'd say it is. No doubt. Yeah. I trust you now.
Yeah, no, it is. It's an amazing looking film because it's set in the war during the War of Independence, and it looks gorgeous. Then Darkness on the Edge of Town is shown there as well, which is so. There's a number of really good Irish films that are just going to, and shorts as well. So it's a chance for people in that over the other side of the country to see films that they just don't get.
Not Dublin centric.
Exactly,
change,
most of them are
for a change.
Yeah, that good stuff sounds good.
Yep. Moving back to Dublin centric, the Underground Film Festival is the week after that. So that's the Underground Cinema Film Festival in Dunleary. So that's running from the Thursday to the Sunday, so the 11th until the 14th.
Yeah, well, I've seen a few films on this that's showing. Trampoline, North Circular Road, Jack and Ralph Plan of Murder, which is closing it, I think.
Yeah, that's closing.
And Limp, the Sean Ryan film, which is really good.
Yeah.
Jack and Ralph Plan of Murder is actually great fun. It's kind of queasily disgusting in moments, but it's actually for a fun, ultra low budget film. Actually, where I work in Double Seven, and it's insane, but it's fun.
That's Jeff Doyle's film.
I laughed quite a bit. And there's a couple of
Jay
moments.
That's rare.
It passes the 6 laugh minimum, and that's all you can ask for. And Limp is great. North Circular Road and Trampoline have their problems, but they're probably worth a watch.
Yeah, and it opens with A Nightingale Falling as well, so that's a chance for a Dublin audience to see it. There's also a special screening of Interview with Vampire, 20th anniversary screening, with a Q&A with Neil Jordan. So
very good.
Yeah, so that promises to...
So you want to see something that's remarkably overrated.
That's on Saturday.
Oh, I like Interview with the Vampire.
I liked Antonio Banderas. It was a far better Vampire than Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt could ever be.
I think Tom Cruise is quite good in it, actually.
He's okay.
Connor Hargan's How to Be Happy, he wrote it. Richard Bulger directed it.
Yeah, that's the film made
from. Yeah,
that's
yeah. him too. So that's... I've seen that. I've heard solid things about it, so I will be checking out. I'll be spending the entire weekend there. So
young Alan Buckley's short film has been shown as well. I believe.
Ah, our good friend,
and quiz team member Alan Buckley.
That's right.
Yeah. So the other
good egg.
Indeed.
Other than his film's called Neighborhood Watch, it's actually a lot of fun. It's short, but it's just. It's very funny.
Real nicely shot as well.
Yeah. There's also Alec Moore's In This Place, which is really good as well. And On Dorcadus, which is just Dorcadus, which is Darkness. It's a short in Irish, and it's a haunting feckin' thing. Yeah. Oh,
What date is this on the festival?
This is the 14th to the or the 11th to the 14th.
Oh, I might have to pop out that weekend to see a couple of things.
It's good to see you getting out of the house, Jay. Yeah.
Thank you, Philip. I do try.
The kindred spirit.
I've seen a number of the shorts that are going to be shown, and I will be featuring them on the site in the run up to the festival.
Oh, excellent! Excellent.
Some of them are really worth seeing, but the Dorcadus, because it's Irish, it's so rare to see it.
Irish language,
yeah.
It is a rare thing.
Roulette as well. Then there's a horror called Mirror Image that's Eamon Tosi directed that, and it's got Owen Quinn. Just Owen Quinn. So not only is he in Limp, he's in this as well.
Yeah.
And it's
Owen's a busy man.
Good on him. He's in another short as well that's featuring in it.
He's all over that weekend.
He is. But it's all worth. It will be very much worth checking out, the Underground Cinema Film Festival. It's on in Dunleary 2 weeks' time. So
good stuff.
And we'll leave it there for the week.
Very good.
Cheers.
Hi, buddies.